Now, the future of the Irish border looks ever more uncertain, and previous assurances from the UK that there would be no hard border are definitely in doubt. The Minister for State for European Affairs, Helen McEntee, joins us on the line now. Helen, we're still in this state of not really knowing what's happening here. I mean, your government was very chipper just before Christmas about the deal it got. Is that deal worth anything now at this stage with the British government, do you think?
I think it is certainly a good morning, guys. I mean, obviously what we agreed was in phase one, and we were always very clear that phase one is phase one, and there obviously is phase two, and we have to move on and make sure that what was agreed is made concrete, is put into a legally binding document, and that's what's happening at the moment. So I think you're right in saying that there's still a lot of uncertainty out there, and at the moment there are a number of things happening, and we are coming to a very crucial point throughout all of this negotiation. So early January, the European Council member states met and agreed a transition timeline and a period. We're looking at the end of December 2020, and that's obviously in line with the next multi-annual financial framework, which is set out for a future 7 years. So there was a reason behind that. There's still discussions with the UK through the task force on the detail of the transition period, and that's something that's ongoing at the moment. Secondly, what we're looking at is the drafting of the withdrawal bill. So essentially that's taking what was agreed in phase one, including the Irish issues, including the issue around the border and the areas of cooperation, the Good Friday Agreement, and putting that into a legally binding text and document. So what we would hope to see is a draft of that document in the next 10 days. And obviously it's extremely important for us, particularly the Irish issues and the specific technicalities that were agreed before Christmas, that they are crystal clear that they were exactly replicated from what was agreed in December into the withdrawal agreement. Thirdly, what's happening and what is probably maybe causing concern maybe at the moment is around the future arrangements and around the future relationships between the UK. So what we would have hoped come the next council meeting, which is the 22nd and 3rd of March, it's not that long away, is that the EU would be able to agree a framework of what that future relationship looked like. Obviously, we want that to be influenced by...
No sign of that happening, Minister, though. No sign of that happening.
Well, we're hearing still a lot of what won't be happening instead of what will be. Now, we saw a speech by Theresa May, the Prime Minister, on Saturday. Yes, it had more detail in it, but it was very much specifically focused on security and defence and these key issues. So what we need to start seeing are more things focused on the economy. So we've, you know, a lot of people have seen in the last week or two, we've done a number of reports ourselves, independent studies that were commissioned by the Department of Business, Enterprise and Innovation, that's looking at the various different scenarios ranging from the best possible relationship, which is what the UK say they want, to the worst possible scenario, which is obviously what none of us want. The impacts, not just on the Irish economy, but the European economy. So, I mean, that is there for the UK government to see. It's very clear the kind of impact that would have on future relationships and trading arrangements. So there's a lot of food for thought. I think there's a lot of things for the government to be looking at. And
how do you square the circle ultimately? Look, I don't mean this as a criticism of the government, because your hands are largely tied on it, but how do you square the circle that if Britain is not a member of the customs union, it seems inevitable, regardless of what the British government promised in December, it seems inevitable that there must be some kind of border?
Well, if it gets to a stage that the arrangement that we've agreed or the future relationship that we're talking about includes a border on the island of Ireland, then automatically the fallback position applies. And this is why it was so important. And I know some people say we were ahead of ourselves, you know, saying that this was a positive outcome in December, but it really was, because if that were to be the case and if we were to get to that stage, this backstop position automatically applies. And if you're looking at the report...
How does it automatically apply, Minister? I mean, I know what they said last December, that one way or another there wouldn't be a border. But if there is a customs union, if Britain is not a member of the customs union, it's hard to see how that situation can pertain.
But again, this is a circle that has to be squared by the UK government. They have given this commitment. They have ensured us that there would be no hard border on the island of Ireland.
They look at the moment, Minister, like they couldn't draw a circle, never mind square one.
Well, we have to work with them. We have to do the work that we're doing. We have to work through the task force with Michel Barnier. We have to point out, I suppose, the challenges and the difficulties. We're doing that on our part. And again, the Copenhagen report very clearly shows that it's not an immediate impact or a big bang if we were to have a worst case scenario. It's a gradual change over time, and in particular, the one biggest issue is around the regulatory divergence. So it's not the impact of a barriers or trade.
Okay.
It's actually the regulatory divergence. So again, this is why that wording was so important. This is why that in the absence of an agreement that ensures no border, that the idea of regulatory alignment, which is what we agreed before Christmas, has fallen into
place. And are the DUP on board with that?
Well, the DUP have agreed to this as well. They're obviously part of the government within Westminster, so we have to work with the task force, engaging with all levels. And obviously, it is a very crucial point. There's no point in saying it's not. There's a lot of work that has to be done in the next month.
Look, we wish you well with that. Just before we let you go, Minister, any thoughts on this current controversy and Fianna Fáil's comments in relation to the sale, the $4 billion sale of residential mortgages and other loans by Permanent TSB? Fianna Fáil saying fears that vulture funds will end up controlling these loans, causing chaos for families. Any response to that?
Well, I mean, obviously this is happening for a reason. Permanent TSB has a high level of non-performing loans, and based on regulation and from Europe, and I suppose ourselves, we want to make sure that there isn't a difficulty within banks that we saw previously before. Obviously, the fear, as you've said, is that funds would be, and those by the funds would be more aggressive, but that's not necessarily the case. And I think people need to know and understand that the Central Bank's Code of Conduct would still apply to the intermediary that takes this on. Now, what's been said is that it wouldn't be enough, that it should be directly on the...
Is this Fianna Fáil legislation? Is this unnecessary? Is that your argument?
Well, I think it's something that we can always look at, but I think the idea that all funds that take this over would be aggressive, that's not the case. And I think if you look at in the past where new loans or new funds have taken over funds like this, they have worked with mortgage owners, they have worked with people who are in arrears, and they have tried to support them.
Okay, all right, we'll leave it there. Thanks indeed for talking to us. Minister for State for European Affairs, Helen McEntee.